Jesus tells this story in Luke chapter 11 of someone who's already gone to bed, put their kids in bed, turned off all the lights, set their alarm, and then suddenly there's a knock on the door. And it's Anita, always Anita, knocking on the door. You know, like, and it's this strange parable where Jesus says, that's what it's like for Christians in their relationship to God. You should wake up his kids in the middle of the night. So that was really interesting, thinking through this sort of shocking, surprising story, that by getting our attention and saying, oh, what? What's that about? You know, the kingdom of heaven is like cholesterol corner. What? In what way at all is that even, you know, it's that kind of parable, right? It gets your attention because it doesn't immediately, it doesn't seem like immediately obvious. And the same kind of way, this Luke 16 is an interesting one, right? Because Jesus is trying to teach some spiritual teaching about human beings and our relationship to God and the meaning of life. And he says, let me tell you a story about a dishonest manager who wastes his master's possessions. Verse 1. Listen, let me teach you something, Uni Fellowship. Learn the lesson of the guy who ripped off his boss. So here we are at Cholesterol Corner. We're in KFC, Burger King, McDonald's, you pick. And there's someone there who maybe dropped out of school, got a job at KFC, and then applied for a manager job, and they got it. And so they've risen up to the heights, and it's there in charge of store clothes. And it gets discovered by the franchise owner that actually they've been stealing money out of the tills, and pocketing it themselves. And maybe they've been taking some tins of stuff, bags of frozen fries and chicken nuggets with no chicken in them home. And this gets found out. Learn the lesson of the thief, kind of. It's weird, isn't it? So almost immediately we're going, what does this mean? Don't be dishonest. Is that the moral of the story? What, you know, in fact, Jesus says, look, the story goes on, verse 8. That the master commended the dishonest manager for he had acted shrewdly. And then Jesus draws the moral from there. The people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than the people of the light. Learn the message of the dodgy manager. Be like a dodgy manager, Uni Fellowship. It's interesting, isn't it? So, yeah, it's a problematic parable. So let's look at the story. So Jesus tells the story of this the rich man who discovered his manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and said, what's this I hear at? Give an account of your management. You can't be managing it any longer. You're busted. Tell me everything. It's all over. So you may as well tell me everything, and then you're out. And then maybe I'll go easy on you. You know, I'm not giving you a reference, but I won't call the cops. I don't know. And then we get taken into the mind of the dodgy one, the shrewd manager, the cunning, the cheat, right? We go into his mind, see things from his point of view. You know, it's dear diary. You know, today I got called by the boss. What am I going to do? You know, and we're suddenly in his brain, and he's going, well, look, what am I going to do? I'm going to lose my job. I don't want to do manual labour. I don't want to be a tradie. And I don't want to beg, or I don't want to be a busker. So what am I going to do so I can land on my feet, you know, so that people will welcome me into their houses, verse 4. Now, this is, again, an economy where households are much more than just, you know, wife and kid and dog and guinea pig, but households are kind of economic units. You know, like a farm, like a small business, you know, where the people live above the shop, that kind of thing, you know. And so I need to find another house, family business, where I can get a job. Because I don't want to dig holes, don't want to be a busker, don't want to beg. What am I going to do? And here's his plan. He goes, how am I going to get out of this situation? How am I going to find a welcome somewhere else? Well, I'm going to leverage my networks. He downloads the contact out of his work Outlook account so that he's got a list of contacts that'll look after him. He gets all the business partners of his boss. So, I mean, again, this isn't happening at KFC anymore, is it? He's now working for a tech startup. He downloads all the contacts of all his tech startup business partners so that he can then approach them. So he invites them each in and says, you know, how much do I owe you? Verse 5, and 800 gallons of olive oil, verse 6. He goes, look, I tell you what, tell you what, Kathleen, you know, I really love working, doing business with you, really appreciate it. How about we just make that a little less? Let's make it 4. No big deal. It's just saying it's me helping you, that's all. Just saying it's me, but that's no big deal. Don't worry about it. Oh, and Dave, how much do we owe you? 1,000 bushels of wheat. How much do you owe? 1,000 bushels of wheat, Dave says. Hey, look, Dave, tell you what, I like you. We've got a good working relationship. Let's make it 8. No big deal, whatever, you know. But, you know, here's my card. So he's kind of building up these relationships, doing favours, so that later on when he calls up Kathleen and says, oh, hey, Kathleen, it's Mikey here. How you going? Yeah, Mikey, the olive oil guy. So I was wondering, you know, if maybe we could explore a possible working partnership. I don't know if you've got any, you know. And Dave, hey Dave, how you going? Just checking in, just networking. And so that's what he's doing. And it's really interesting, the response, isn't it? Verse 8. The master, when he finds out about this, commends the dishonest manager because he acted shrewdly. I don't know when the last time you used the word shrewd was. It's one of those Bible words a bit, isn't it? Like blessed or something, diadem and citadel. You only kind of use it in church songs and whatever. Maybe you could say cunning, savvy, sneaky, resourceful would be maybe a very generous way of putting it. You know, works the angles, player. I don't know, you can type in the chat if you've got a preferred. Use those words in board games, Andy says. Yeah, that's the challenge this week. Figure out how to slide shrewd into a sentence. But it has that overtones of, be as shrewd as serpents, but as innocent as doves, is another famous saying of Jesus. Cunning as serpents, as innocent as doves. So savvy that can be sneaky or can just be, sort of smart, resourceful. Now, you kind of wonder exactly, I mean, again, these stories are sufficiently thin, and that's part of the nature of parables, is that they often are, you get just enough to bring the story along. So, you know, this is a story. These aren't even real people. But we're left wondering, aren't we? Like, what's this commendation? Is it kind of the kind of thing of where he goes, actually, that's a legitimate use of the relationships while you have them? Credit to you. You're fired. or is it like, you shouldn't have wasted my possessions and you shouldn't have actually further wasted my possessions for your future, you know, well-being. I'm angry twice over, but I can't help but smile. That kind of thing. Where it's like I just can't help but kind of go, well, you know. I mean, that happens sometimes parenting teenage kids where I'll be angry at kid about something and you know, annoyingly, Nikki and I have raised kids like us, and so we kind of get a bit of ourselves back at us, and so you'll kind of tell off a kid for something and then they'll turn around and twist your words around and get you in a corner and be a real smart ass. And sometimes as a parent you just can't help but smile because you go, yeah, okay, you got me, that's kind of funny, cheeky little and do what I told you to. So it could be that kind of thing, like, man, I can't believe you did that. Maybe it's a bit like, you know how there's those stories, I don't know if you ever saw that that movie with Tom Hanks and Leonardo DiCaprio, Catch Me If You Can. It's a solid movie, that one. Dave has, yeah. About a con artist, Leo DiCaprio, went back when he's skinny instead of dad bod Leo, where he's a con artist. But often those stories, and spoiler alert, I won't say if it happens in this one, but often in those stories, when the con artist gets caught, the FBI ends up saying, hey, tell you what, we could, lessen your sentence if you come work for us. You know, that kind of thing. A hacker gets busted breaking their way into a military institution through their tech networks. Hey, you know, you shouldn't have done that, but how about you come and help us with our cybersecurity and help us hack into other people's military networks? Do you know what I mean? So maybe there's a little bit of that kind of thing. You shouldn't have done it, but gosh, you did it well. So it's a weird story, hey? It's a controversial, edgy, sort of gritty story about a guy in trouble needs a welcome somewhere else, and so leverages relationships for his future well-being. And at least on some level, that's commendable. And then Jesus draws the message, the moral to the story. Why has he told the story? Interesting story, Jesus. Is there any point to it? That's the second half of verse 8. For the people of this world, meaning like not people who know and trust God and are people of the world to come, trusting God, but the people of this world, just living for this world, are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than the people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself, so when it's gone, you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Jesus is saying, hey, you know what? A lot of people, when it comes to just passing the English competency exam, I've got a mate who teaches English in Melbourne, and his business got routed by another competitor, a cynical competitor. So my mate is a really good English teacher. His competitor figured out that in the newest versions of the English tests, you can basically cheat the robo test examiner. You just bomb it with words like shrewd and certain kinds of sentence constructions, and you'll be able to confuse the robot enough to pass without really knowing much English. There's a kind of cunningness about that. You know, people will cheat on exams if they can get away with it. People will figure ways to get through their taxes. People will... the other day we looked at the stats for our video messages, and Christine is, you know, dominating it. And so I said something complimentary about that, and she said, no, I just gamed the algorithm. So you could figure out how to... And her content has been great as well. But yes, she went, nah, just credit to knowing which buttons to press. People can figure out the search engine optimization. They can figure out the tax loopholes. They can figure out... work all these kinds of things. They put so much effort into it. People become masters at figuring out, are you an autumn fruit or a winter window or whatever the thing is, to get their colour combinations right with their complexion to make the best possible impression. People figure out exactly how to write the essay for the lecturer to get the mark because of the proclivities of the lecturer. They, you know, people do all this stuff for worldly things. And then Christians so often are lazy, thoughtless, careless, lethargic when it comes to things of far greater significance, far greater value. Christians often are less thoughtful, less proactive. It's a rebuke, isn't it? It's a real challenge. We'll drill into that a little bit in a second, but first let's try and get our head around what Jesus is saying we therefore ought to do in verse 9. Let's stick close to Scripture. Because we could go off to this to say, therefore, search engine optimization for ministry. That's the moral to the story or something. But now Jesus says, here's the area of shrewdness, in particular, using worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself, so when it's gone, you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings. What does that mean? It's quite a strong word, actually. Use filthy wealth, filthy lucre, you know, dirty cash to gain friends for yourself, so that when it's gone, because it will go, all that stuff will go, you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings, a new creation, far better. What does that mean? Well, this is a guy who's exposed, who's jobless and homeless, trying to find a welcome in another home. How do we get welcomed? We humans who face death and the judgment of God, how do we find a welcome beyond death? How do we find a welcome when we face the shut out into outer darkness of the rejection from God forever and ever? Well, God's the friend we need, isn't he? God's the one whose welcome we desperately need. He's the friend we need to make. And so we need to, in this life, with all the busyness and the worry and the wealth and the security and the careerism and all that, all the stuff of this life, we need to figure out how we use that to secure a welcome with God. Now that's weird, right? Because you can't buy tickets to heaven. You don't earn your way to heaven by giving money to church or money to charity. But the idea here, in the first place, at the very least, is the way you use your money demonstrates where your heart really is. You see that in verse 13, don't you? No one can serve two masters. Either they'll hate one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You can't serve both God and money. The Pharisees, who love money, sneer at Jesus because of this. And Jesus says, you're the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of men, but God knows your hearts. What's highly valued among men is detestable in God's sight. You see money not as filthy, dirty lucre, not as dirty cash. You love it. The security it brings, the power it brings, the comforts it brings, the status it brings. But a person who loves God, who serves God, who sees this world in its rejection of God for what it is, and sees God and the world he will bring when he makes all things new as far better, that can be seen through the way you use your wealth. You serve God or money, it'll be seen. The way you use worldly wealth, it'll be seen where your heart is. The way you guys use your money, think about money, act towards money, build your lifestyle, the decisions you make on the micro level and the macro level, that'll show something of your heart. Yeah? It kind of gets shown there as well in verses 10, 11, and 12, where Jesus says, the way you handle little things like money, that's going to show how you'll handle greater things, like the riches of God's word and so on. And so at the very least, the parable is a dramatic challenge to say, be smart. And you know what the smartest thing is? It's not actually your CV and your investments. It's not actually your HDs or your networks. The smartest thing you can do is in your whole stance to wealth, status, and property and success, the whole approach to that should be to worship God through it, to show your heart of serving God through it. So whether you're rich or poor, you're serving God where you are, with who you are and what you have. And so you're building your friendship with God. You're making friends with God. It's not that you earn your way to heaven, but that it's you express your trust in God, love for God, worship of God in these things. And so when it's all gone, come back to Luke chapter 12. You see that kind of challenge, right? There's a really smart person who's resourceful and successful, has massive crops, Luke chapter 12, that bear a great yield, and then builds more, establishes more, bigger barns. Verse 18, Luke 12, 18. This wealthy person says, I'll tear down my barns, I'll build bigger barns, Luke 12, verse 18, and I'll store my grain in these bigger barns, and I'll say to myself, you have plenty of goods laid up for many years. He's been shrewd. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. But then what does God say to that? Someone who's rich in this world, who's made friends in this world, who's looked after themselves in this world, God says, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded of you, and then who will get all you've prepared for yourself? That's how it will be for anyone who stores up for themselves, things for themselves, but is not rich towards God. He's rich to himself, but not rich towards God. Showing his love for God, trust in God, worship for God in the way he uses his wealth. I know what I'll do, he should have said. How can I use this wealth to both generate more wealth, but to give, to provide, to care for the poor, to further the cause of God's purposes, to show that I serve God, not money. Rather than just eat, drink, and be merry, get a shack, renovate the shack, go on a holiday. How can I not only do it for me, but do it for God, serve God, worship God with my wealth? So at the very least, it's a really simple thing. One of the smartest things, brothers and sisters, and friends who aren't Christian, who might be listening in too, one of the smartest things you can do with your life is not just be smart in this life. The wisest, shrewdest, cleverest 10 steps to success, click here for the e-newsletter things you could do to really secure the wisest investment of your wealth is to be rich towards God, worship God in the way you use your money, your power, your life, to worship him, love him, serve him in the way you use your wealth. And that I think, comes out in an additional application of this parable I think draws on some of the details of the parable in a slightly further way. Because what does God want you to do with your money? How do you be rich to God with your money? Well, a big part of it is actually using your money to love others. And in particular, to love others, including sharing the love of God with them. So this is where the parable and its application kind of, the application gets a bit sticky here, in the sense that I think it's legitimate to say that this make friends for yourself, verse 9, use worldly wealth to make friends for yourself so that when it's gone you'll be welcomed into eternal dwellings, is not just make friends with God by being rich towards God, but actually God charges us to love our neighbours as ourselves, and in our love of our neighbours to also tell them of the love of God, that actually we can use our worldly wealth to love others and so make friends for ourselves with others, and to love others in an eternal way as we tell them about God and his love for them. Jesus Christ sent to the world not just to teach but to die for the sins of the world so that people can be welcomed into eternal dwellings. And so I make friends for myself as I love others, give to others. I make friends for myself for eternity as I, through my wealth, my hospitality, my love, my invitation, my life, my words, I tell them about God and his mercy and his grace and his gospel. And I invite them to a citywide gathering for a Christianity 1A course, or to church, or to meet other friends and chat in an informal way. I'm making friends for myself for eternity. I think that's a legitimate application. Surely it is very much the wider teaching of Scripture, for sure. What do you put on earth here to do? To worship God, yes. Worship him in the work of your hands, yes. To do good to those in need as you have opportunity, yes. And to share in God's work in history of reconciling the world to himself through the death and resurrection of his Son, yes. And so as you use your money to give to the poor, as you use your money to advocate for the powerless, as you use your money to fund Christian mission, and as you use your money in your own personal hospitality and generosity to actually host people in your home or out at a cafe, and to show not just what will be comfortable for me and my buddies and the girl or the guy that I like and my family. How can I use the shack that I bought just for my family to get away from it all? But also, how can I use these things to invite others, to share with others, to love others, to make friends for eternity? Because the people of this world, you know, they work the angles, they build the networks, they grow their followers and their likes. They climb the ladder and make the connections and draw in mentors, and they get into the in crowds and dress in the way to be accepted, and to talk in the way, and to know which fork and spoon to use on the dinner table at the fancy thing. They're so shrewd, so cunning, so thoughtful for worldly reasons, and yet Christians would just kind of drift along. What are you doing with your life? Oh, just, I don't know, assignment, job, just kind of just Christianing along, maybe. You know, and we just drift along with our plans, our lives, our decisions, our calendar. And maybe then just we put more thought into the things of this world because that's sensible, isn't it? Sensible to invest, sensible to have a career. But Jesus is saying, why don't you be shrewd and cunning and clever and thoughtful about an eternal perspective? And actually think about, what would my life look like? What would my the direction and shape of my life look like if I'm going to live in the light of eternity, and I'm going to live for the love of others, and I'm going to live to share the message of God's grace with others? What would that life look like? Be shrewd like that, Jesus says. Be like the dodgy manager in that sense. It's a cool challenge, isn't it? Now, there are real risks in that. There are risks of becoming a manipulative evangelist, isn't there? You know, use your cunning shrewdness to be a salesy evangelist. Don't be a real friend, be a fake friend, you know, who pretends to like people to suck them into the church. You know, people describe the behaviour of new religious movements as love bombing, where you find a vulnerable person and you just bomb them with love, just love all over them to draw them into the community where they're loved and accepted, and to make them dependent upon the community, and then they convert. And then you don't have to love bomb them anymore because they're in. No, it's not, it can't be just love bombing, can't be manipulative. It's still got to be sincere, genuine. You know, it's got to be guided by all of God's word. Yeah, the way we're cunning and shrewd must be, as Jesus says, be as cunning as serpents, but as innocent as doves. But it is be cunning as serpents and innocent as doves, and that's Jesus' point here.